Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, August 30th, 2016, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a 65 degrees, a comfortable 65 degrees, and partly sunny here in upstate New York. It's supposed to be an amazing week, probably the best week of summer weather yet. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Antenna, Microscopic Machines, and Mind-Controlled Brain Nanobots. And yeah, we looked at those mind-controlled brain nanobots to deliver drugs for mental disease, and they were experimenting in a cockroach. But don't worry about it, because they're going to test it on mousies next, then probably monkeys, and then humans. How horrifying is that? And they can get inside your head and deliver medications just by thought. And they said eventually that you'll be able to do it yourself. It's time for, I think they use Ritalin as an example. Time for my Ritalin dosage. Well, let's just rub our nose and we'll get our daily dose. We ended the show, the story out of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. And I think this is where we're going to kick it off. Titled How Genetic Editing Became a National Security Threat. We've been talking about CRISPR for quite a number of years now, and CRISPR has been democratized across the planet. Add genes, sending out 60,000 copies of CRISPR to anyone and everyone who wanted to mess with splicing and dicing genes in mommy's backyard. I just can't believe that they did that. We actually read that story way back when. But the kid on Long Island. I had friends from Long Island in college. UB in Buffalo was still an in-state school for kids from Long Island to be able to still have an in-state education. And so a lot of them came to Buffalo. So a good number of the University of Buffalo students were New York City students. And, of course, my sister went to New York. So it was all in fun. I got to visit there a lot. But anyway, in Long Island, the kid had been splicing and dicing DIY genetic editing kits in his parents' back bedroom. And nobody was concerned. You know, we raised that alarm bell a long time ago. And then, again, nobody's messaged me, so I'm guessing either nobody did any research or I'm correct in this. Anything that I've looked at, we've done enough history of the U.S. bioterror program. We've tracked it all back to Plum Island and Fort Detrick and Operation Paperclip. We looked at using insects as disease vectors. And Richard Nixon, inking that agreement, I never remember which one it was, finally, in 1972, to say, no, we will not make chemical or biological weapons anymore. We promise, wink, with their fingers crossed. Except, in a defensive posture, in the name of protecting us from pathogens with vaccines. And the biowarfare program never ended. Just went undercover for a little while. But then we found out the CDC, and I'm sure there's a lot more. I'm sure Patrick Jordan and Clint Richardson would straighten me out if we wanted to find out the whole history behind. I've read into it, but who remembers? There's so much. Look at who created the CDC. It was all private institutions. It was funded with money. Trying to remember which foundation. One of the big private foundations, Rockefellers or the oil moguls. I mean, I think we ended up with the documentary that Corbett had done in regards to big oil. It goes way, 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 way back. Big oil and pharmaceuticals are totally related. But the CDC was a privately funded institution who is dictating to us what's good for the country. But they have lines drawn, we found out, with that whole anthrax scandal where they'd been sending out anthrax all across the world to all these military bases after they'd been irradiating it, thinking that it was dead. They found out, no, it's not dead. And no, we've been sending it all over for a really, really long time, thinking that every time we irradiated this stuff, we killed every anthrax spore. And no, they didn't. We also found out there was a scandal at the CDC with the smallpox kind of sitting out on a top of a filing cabinet. And then the DOD, whoops, was shipping this stuff everywhere. We found out smallpox from the CDC was being shipped in Ziploc baggies, and people were handling it. We found Plum Island also moved from offshore of the mainland of the motherland, and it moved right into the heartland of Kansas, Manhattan, Kansas, in Tornado Alley. It's not done yet, but we are using a facility at the University of Kansas right now to do bioterror stuff. But we've discovered in all of our research that, first of all, not only is it all dirty, not only did they do horrifying experiments on people, unauthorized, on citizens, and I don't know, it's early. I've only literally had about 7 cups of coffee, so don't ask me to, like, start spewing information from memory, because it's not there yet. Fingers haven't even connected to the brain properly yet. But there were lots of them. Look them up. Look them up. Human experimentation. We did one time. I know it's in the title of one of my shows, but there was a big article, and we went down like 10 or 15 different horrifying human experiments that were done in this country. And, of course, in Japan and in Russia and in Germany. They were all over, people. And they're still doing it to this day, except that today it's all being done in the name of precision medicine. CRISPRing humans, nanobots in your blood and in your brain to deliver drugs. It's all part of the same thing. This technology is warfare technology. Remember, I told you in that interview we listened to with George Church, one of the main dudes at Harvard, who is spearheading creating the synthetic human genome, who's part of the Broad Institute, who's working with DARPA funding, we discovered, to manufacture DNA. That George Church is a lunatic. He is carrying out an agenda, and he's got DOD funding, and now we have all the tech titans involved, right? We found out it's all about making money. It's all about living forever. It's all about venture capitalisting. Venture capitalisting. Upside down, sideways, and left to Thursday. These guys are all about making money. And even Obama said that when he announced precision medicine. This is going to launch the United States into the 21st century economy. And guess what? We are the product. We are the sacrificial guinea pig that now these corporations don't have a line item R&D budget. They're going to be able to do clinical trials now and write case studies just like the tech companies do. They don't have to go through that pesky FDA and spend millions of dollars to get approval. God, no. Clinical trials. Look, at this is what we promised. We have peer reviewed. So we have all this stuff going on, though, and this was my point of that long 10-minute soliloquy, is that nothing that I have read or researched over the last couple years, even after we looked at all the biowarfare stuff, we learned about security level 4 for pathogens that wasn't really being followed anyway by the CDC or the DOD, and that chain of custody was broken many times, and there were lots of violations. But it doesn't appear to me like there is any type of security level, bio level hazard 4 or above in any of these gene editing labs. Every picture and every story that I've read, I have not seen or read anything that leads me to believe that they're taking extreme precautions with this stuff so it doesn't get out. You know, some little genetically modified bacteria that, I don't know, maybe eats body fat? Who the hell knows? I mean, they are genetically modifying life at the push of a button. Zip, 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 unzip. And, you know, like I said, George Church, Mr. Synthetic Biology, George Church, was telling us that when CRISPR was first designed, created, they didn't know how to cut and paste back in those days. They only knew how to cut. So CRISPR, in its very early days, was just a killing machine. Well, don't think that these tools aren't going to be used for warfare. And that is what the story by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists is all about. We're going to look at that now. I think we only made it through the first paragraph at the end of the show yesterday. So, all right, let's start here. How genetic editing became a national security threat. Director of National Intelligence, James R. Clapper, sent shockwaves through the national security and biotechnology communities with his assertion in his worldwide threat assessment testimony at the Senate Armed Services Committee in February that genome editing had become a global danger. Now remember, like I said, that Adgene sent 60,000 copies of CRISPR out to anyone who wrote to them or messaged them and said they wanted one. Was the most powerful new gene editing tool that we have. It came poof out of nowhere, and who worked on it? Oh, George Church as well. Didn't we think that it was a good idea to keep that under wraps? Didn't we think that we didn't want the Chinese to get their hands on that, or somebody in the Middle East who really doesn't like us very much because we blew up all their relatives with autonomous drone bombs? I don't know. Apparently, we just wanted to democratize the destruction of biology, the Tower of Babel with DNA. Anyway, James Clapper went as far as to include in the reports weapons of mass destruction section alongside threats from North Korea, China's nuclear modernization, and chemical weapons in Syria and Iraq. And this new technology, gene editing, he said, could open the door to a potentially harmful, and this is a quotation, potentially harmful biological agents or products with far-reaching economic and national security implications, unquote. So, what has warranted this warning, and what can be done to mitigate this threat now that we've let at least 60,000 CRISPR genies out of the bottle? And you remember when we were first reading about CRISPR, we found out that from one copy of CRISPR, you can make endless copies of CRISPR. So they sent out 60,000 copies that now people can be copying. So 60,000 exponentially, to me, spells bioweapon all over the planet. I mean, it's when we first saw that story, I was like, what? What are these people doing? They were like all these dumb students. Oh, yeah, let's democratize cutting genes. Because, you know, we can't do anything dangerous. Let's just send it out to everybody free. It's insanity. All right, a little bit of history here. Since the discovery of the double helix in 1953, biotechnology has made progress exceeding that of arguably any other technology in human history. Gene editing is not a new process. It was the subject of a 1975 Asilomar, A-S-I-L-O-M-A-R conference, which convened to establish standards that would allow geneticists to conduct cutting-edge research without endangering public health. And there's a couple links here. I think tonight this is what I'm going to do is dig into some of this stuff because there are quite a few interesting links I wanted to get to. I lost my place then. Public health. Since then, advances like the polymerase chain reaction process, the Human Genome Project, and the Encyclopedia of DNA Element Projects. How about the barcoding DNA project, too? They forgot to mention that one. Have fueled our understanding of the human genome, accelerated through advances in computing power. Ding, ding. Law of exponential returns. Data storage. Ding, ding. Lots and lots of cloud. And big data algorithm development. Ding, ding, ding. I told you algorithm was going to be the word of 2016. And it sure has been. It's unbelievable. With an algorithm, they can do anything with the data once it's in a database. Landmark results include the first synthesis of a virus in 2002 and the first synthetic cell created in 2010. And if I am not mistaken, that first synthetic cell was created by Peter Thiel. Was it not? I know it was the Craig Venter Institute. There was a story about Peter Thiel, and I just saw something else about him recently. It was the Craig Venter Institute, which, hey, Ventner's another one of those rich lunatics that is out to destroy the human race. But now comes along clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats. All right, Cupid doll for anyone who can get what that affectionately stands for. Ding, ding, ding. We're going to do the Jeopardy music. Hopefully I don't get a strike for it. Do, 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 do. That is CRISPR for short. CRISPR comes along and now is changing everything. Ding, ding, ding. Other editing techniques have been around for more than a decade, but they are laborious, less accurate, and quite expensive. And we just read a story the other day that said Beyond CRISPR, I believe was the title of that story. They're already working on three or four different technologies because now CRISPR isn't accurate enough. Guys, this, I don't see how this is sustainable. I don't see how where we got the world willy-nilly and now we are in the superpower race. Just like back in the days, I mean, growing up in the 80s, I don't know, I had graduated in 86. If everyone remembers Russia, the Iron Curtain, right? The wall falling. You remember Reagan? I grew up thinking we were going to get blown up by nukes. We had the arms race. This is way worse than any arms race, guys. Everything we've learned about nuclear, I mean, nuclear is bad, that's for sure. And if you're at ground zero, well, you're probably not going to make it. But, you know, back in the 80s, pre-Fukushima, pre-Chernobyl, there was that thought that if a bomb went off, or oh my God, if there was a China syndrome, we would all instantly die. Well, we discovered we don't all instantly die. We mutate. The atmosphere gets excited and all kinds of wondrous things happen. Remember, we were talking about like mutated bacterias and never before seen. It's just amazing. All this crazy stuff is happening. We're digging into some of the Manhattan Project research, kind of tying that to some of the things that's going on now. GE was all involved. That's for another day. There were some really interesting sweater threads I started pulling on up there, connecting some of this mad science gone mad, nanotech and gene editing to even the nuclear weapons program and the Department of Energy. But we'll save that. Let's not get ahead of ourselves or distracted. Let's finish the story, Jewel. Anyway, other editing techniques have been around for more than a decade, but they are laborious, less accurate, and quite expensive. Before that, the previous traditional methods required generations to see results. While some techniques can recognize longer DNA sequences and have better specificity than CRISPR, they are costly. $5,000 for each order versus $30 for CRISPR. $30, guys. So I don't know if that's $30 for a CRISPR kit to do your own editing or $30 to send it in to DNARS and have them build you a custom synthetic sequence. But $30 versus $5,000. So these other techniques that can recognize longer DNA sequences and are more specific than CRISPR are costly and difficult to engineer and sometimes require several tries to identify a sequence that works. Hence, the rise of CRISPR, which along with CRISPR-associated proteins, which is the Cas and the CRISPR-Cas9, provides a way, right? Because CRISPR, of course, without the Cas is just a killing machine. Cas provides a way to target, snip, and insert exact pieces of genome. The CRISPR-Cas9 protein has received the most attention in this recent discussion. Yet other enzymatic proteins such as CRISPR-CPF1 use a different type of scissors and might be just as effective. The benefits of such technology are obvious, but preferred traits can rapidly enter the species. Test animals like mice can be designed more efficiently. They can be designed. Mice can be designed more efficiently for biomedical experiments. Mosquitoes can be engineered so they cannot reproduce. And remember, we really kind of stumbled into all of this CRISPR technology when we first started digging into the GMO mosquitoes. And trust me, anyone who's been listening for a while knows this. We read about GMO mosquitoes back a couple years ago already, before it was ever a glimmer in any Oxitec, now owned by InterExon, by the way, to be releasing across the Cayman Islands, Brazil. And now I'm looking at their fodder bullshit propaganda. Comes through my feed every day. Remember I mentioned I subscribe to them on Facebook. And now I see that they are InterExon keeps resharing Oxitec's post because, you know, they're one and the same. But they're going on with little kids. The picture I saw last night was Floridians are all on board with releasing GMO mosquitoes. And there's like a group of little children all standing around this clear plexiglass cage with a hole in it. And the little kid is sticking her hand into the plexiglass cage full of genetically modified mosquitoes. You know, we read that study not too long ago about the guys in Japan. I remember, by the way, Bill Melinda Gates contributed money to Oxitec for the genetically modified mosquitoes, and Oxitec was a spin-out that had an IPO, went public. I don't know what they do in England, but same difference. It's now a public company. They were a spin-out of Oxford University. Yes, that's the Humanity Project and Stephen Hawking and all the crazy research over in England seems to all come out of Oxford University. Oxford, Oxitec, get it? But it's true. That's a spin-out from Oxford. But we had Bill Melinda Gates sprinkle funding these GMO mosquitoes. And we had a paper come out, MIT Technology Review, that we did it last week, 2 weeks ago. Where they actually, they're like, oh, this is hypothetical. But they did it in a lab. They engineered mosquitoes to be flying vaccinators. And inside the mosquito, they had created a quote-unquote vaccination for leishmaniasis, or however you say it, which, if I'm not mistaken, is elephant man disease. They get that a lot in the deserts, that was saying, which I had no idea, but... And it comes from a mosquito, which I had no idea. Who knew elephant man disease came from a mosquito? But they engineer mosquitoes in Japan to be flying vaccinators to vaccinate against elephant man disease with a drug that was produced inside of the mosquito. Now, this stuff, you know, when we go back to the beginnings of the biowarfare program, like I mentioned, we talked a lot about our historical biowarfare program utilizing at Plum Island insects as disease vectors. What were those insects that they've been messing with since World War II or before? Mosquitoes? Yes! How did you guess? Mosquitoes, fleas, and ticks, among other things. But namely, mosquitoes, fleas, and ticks. And mosquitoes are so tiny, no one will ever notice them. They are invaders. They can't be held back by borders. And oh my God, it's a pandemic. And oh my God, we can create new vaccines. Oh, it's so wonderful. And we can genetically modify them. And their generations happen really fast. So we discovered these genetically modified mosquitoes have a problem. Right? We put a kill switch into them. But oh, that kill switch was to breed them. So they required tetracycline to live, and there is no tetracycline existing in the environment, but wait, yeah. They discovered horribly, yes, there is, especially in countries such as Brazil, with the livestock and the runoff, that they could potentially survive, as opposed to having the Terminator gene like they were engineered to have. So this is one small example. And now let's amplify that 60,000 times and then exponentialize it over and over again. And you will see where the problem lies, because who knows what any of those 60,000 people who got their hands on CRISPR now copied 60,000 to the 150 millionth power. I mean, who knows how many hands these killing tools are in now around the globe, with every lunatic hacker and cracker would-be terrorist hiding under beds working on something because they hate the United States. I mean, think about that. Just think about that. And I know it sounds like fear porn, but they set this up. They let this happen. Jennifer Doudna and that George Church and a bunch of the other loonies let this shit get out there and get it to the world. Oh, it's going to make the world such a wonderful place. It's going to cure cancer. Yeah. Well, it's going to cure cancer. Going to make us bump into walls and grow wings out of the back of our head and die a horrible death of some pathogen that's way worse than a bird dog flu. Bird dog cow flu, the last one. It's going to be like a cockroach flu mixed with a chicken virus. I mean, it could be anything. With tree man disease. Actually, I think Corbett the other week had mentioned tree man. The guy got this disease and he literally looks like he's transforming into a tree, like cross phyla, cross creation. I mean, we have databases now of humans, human genome, insect genome. There was a huge insect project, and plant genomes. The DARPA lady said we want to be able to push buttons to create life on demand with traits from any of these different libraries. I don't think that they're too far from that. From everything that I've been reading, they have this programming language now that's a lot like Microsoft's .NET with reusable assemblies. And if you've ever seen the old days of programming language versus the new days, you have reusable components. That really kind of started to change in the beginning 2000s when Paul and I first started getting into application development. I don't develop. I design. I come up with how it needs to work. He does the coding. But you have reusable assemblies. So anything that we've created before, any little process we've created to go and fetch and bring back data or go and process and pop something out the other side, those are all reusable assemblies now that I can use regardless if it's Facebook, if it's YouTube, if it's Twitter, if it's running a back-end query on my database and spitting us out data. That is all in a big library now. Well, CRISPR does some of, and not CRISPR, the CRISPR editing framework, I would have to say, the editing framework does the same similar thing. It allows them to index libraries of processes now that they have cracked these codes as to what ATCG does what and what combination. They now have executables, maybe you could call it. You know, this gene sequence will give you laser vision. And this gene sequence will give you infrared. You know, I mean, I could see that very easily. And as they continue to pick away to understand, and so take a while. I don't think it's going to be taking any 100,000 years to do it. I don't think it's even going to take 100 years to do it. I think in the next few years, like I've said, we're going to see some really rapid, insane changes. And remember that CRISPR and just tinkering with the human genome is the very beginning of all this technology. And let's read a little bit more, because that's exactly what they start talking about, are the threats. The benefits of such technology are obvious. Well, not to me. But I guess if we had benevolent dictators out there who all they wanted was goodness for us, and like I said the other day, helping little kittens stuck in puddles, maybe I'd trust them, but I don't trust them at all. Because preferred traits can rapidly enter a species. Test animals like mice could be designed more efficiently for biomedical experiments. Mosquitoes can be engineered so they cannot reproduce. So can people. Wink, wink. And plants can be developed for drought resistance and higher yield. Monsanto, GMO foods. Guys, this is all part of the same evil plan that's been going on for a very long time. And don't forget, they are now CRISPRing food. Mushrooms are one. They don't require any type of GMO labeling whatsoever. Because the lunatics in charge have decided that CRISPRing really isn't gene editing. Because we're using an E. coli bacteria or whatever we happen to be using at the time that has a payload that then goes in and makes our edited changes. We're not doing it with a virus anymore. We're not doing it in a petri dish anymore, cutting things. No, we're letting this CRISPR stuff go do it now, do our evilness. So gene editing, schmean editing. Don't worry about it, Jewel. It's not going to hurt too much. And you won't notice. Plants can be developed for drought resistance and higher yields, and diseases can be eliminated. This is in people. By deactivating the responsible genes in a given host. Remember, we mentioned these experiments a couple different times. There's the one in China going down for squamous cell lung cancer. And then there's the one at the Penn U that's going down. There were three different cancers that they were working on. They're waiting for the final approval. I think I linked to both of those in the notes yesterday, but we've read those stories before. CRISPRing humans is in the not-too-distant future for absolutely certain. The bioengineer and author Robert Carlson notes that genome editing shows great promise for next-generation plastics. Oh, let's make some plastic out of CRISPR. Look at that's a benefit. We could also show great promise for agricultural products, which I'm not really sure. I'm thinking like splicing and dicing BT corn, except doing it cleanly so we don't have to label BT corn as GMO anymore. It makes bug stomachs explode. But hey, Johnny, don't worry about that tummy ache every time you eat corn. It'll pass. It's also promising for bioremediation organisms. And we've talked about these. Those are like those mysterious microbes that appeared in the Gulf of Mexico. Apparently we didn't know really existed, or maybe we never really saw them before. After the BP oil spill, there were all these oil-munching bacteria that just appeared. And we shouldn't have sprayed all that Corexit because that really screwed things up. These oil-munching bacteria ate it all up, they said. They could also use it for carbon-neutral fuels, which we have one of those stories queued up. That was them gene-editing bacteria to turn carbon dioxide into methane. Actually, I mentioned that one yesterday. I just queued that up for after the story. Where carbon dioxide is such a horrifying global warming gas. Of course, it's our byproduct, one of our waste products. And humans, you know, we're just consumers of this planet. And then we put out things that are bad for the environment, just like the cow, where they're telling us we really shouldn't be eating meat anymore because, I don't know, climate change. Cows fart too much. Wait, cows fart too much. Cows put out methane. Methane is a way worse greenhouse gas any day than carbon dioxide. And as a matter of fact, plants and trees and anything green consumes carbon dioxide as food. So why would we be wanting to get rid of it and replace it with methane? Well, let's get rid of the carbon dioxide. Remember, Bill Gates talked about making that carbon quotient zero as a way to save the planet in the TED Talk. But let's turn plant food, carbon dioxide, into methane. Something that's a way, way more serious greenhouse gas that we can't even breathe. And let's turn it into a fuel. Yeah, that's a great idea. It's going to happen when we burn all that methane. But not only are we going to turn it into a fuel, we're going to do it with genetically engineered bacteria and have it poop out, basically, the methane. It's insanity. And I mean, I know that happens in nature. It happens in nature. And if it evolved and happened in nature, well, there's a good majority of the time we can maybe find a benefit for it, or it hasn't killed us yet. And if it has, well, most of the time we can usually find a cure. But once we put our creator God hat on and we start splicing and dicing with profit and power and competition, keeping up with the Joneses, countering counter-terror measures from places like China. Once we have all those different lunatics working on genetically modifying bacteria to make things, it's not something that's probably going to be in the long-term best interest of your grandchildren. They can also use it so carbon neutral fuels, novel enzymes, and better vaccines. Yes, yes, yes. And we've read about lots of vaccines and gene therapies that are coming. So where's the threat in all this? They ask, where's the threat? Well, for starters, the low cost and growing availability of these powerful new techniques means untrained personnel like Johnny and Mommy's back bedroom in Long Island. Untrained personnel will inevitably gain access to them and lack experience, disregard for codes and ethics, and ignorance of appropriate precautions, all but guaranteed dangerous outcomes. Well, no shit, Sherlock. I mean, really? What did they think was going to happen? 60,000 copies of CRISPR just sent out to anybody and everybody that can then be copied ad nauseum without any type of loss effect. And sent to 60,000 times a million power people. Yeah. We got a problem, Clyde. We got a big, big problem now. Get your level 4 bio suit since nobody else is doing it. The dual-use nature of gene editing also falls under broader concerns about do-it-yourself biology. We did a bunch of shows on DIY gene splicing. Search by titles. But it also falls under broader concerns about do-it-yourself biology, biohacking, neighborhood labs, and related trends. Ding, ding. And even inexperienced hands. This new technology holds a potential for permanently and irreversibly altering the human genome without knowing what the full results might be. Well, hey, at least the atomic scientists get it to write this publication. This is what we've been saying since day one. You screw with the genome, you let some genie out of the bottle, there's no stuffing that genie back into the bottle, especially if it turns into a monster. You know, we got Godzilla. And we got, I don't know, microbes that eat biological human CATGs. I can't even put on my creative hat to think of evil plans anymore because everything's an evil plan. Everything could be turned into a killing machine. You know, these are big swords that they've released. And yes, there's two sides to a sword, so we could cure all of you, or, oh yeah, we could kill all of you. Gene drive. When we first started reading about this, it was in regards to the gene drive. And that was utilizing CRISPR to be able to put a genetic mutation through an entire population for either population elimination or population suppression in the name of the mosquitoes. But they can insert these genes into an entire population in one generation to fully change them or to fully cut off reproduction, to fully make a genetic change to an entire species. What gives us the right to do that? Number one, talking about ethics. I mean, there are no ethics. There is no international board that's putting their foot down saying this is not ethical. Remember, we had ethics on the board for about 6 months. I am all about ethics. We started reading. You know, they were questioning whether or not we should CRISPR humans even. 6 months ago, though, we were discussing whether or not AI self-driving vehicles should ethically be killing the driver to save the 10 people on the sidewalk when you were going to inevitably crash. That was the big deal, and CRISPRing humans was a no-no. And now in the name of science, in the name of curing cancer and all known diseases in the future, CRISPRing humans is Don't worry about it. It's all for your own good. Nobody's even arguing about it. They got commercials on TV. They're saying how great it is, and it's going to cure cancer. Anything that cures the big C, that they've dumped billions of dollars of research into, and no one could ever come up with any idea, I guess. But now, all of a sudden, out of the blue, came out of nowhere, poof, we got the cure. From 50 different directions, step right up, guinea pigs. We're testing it right now, and we might be able to save your Nana. Come on, Nana. We'll take good care of you. And even in experienced hands, this new technology holds the potential for permanently and irreversibly altering the human genome without knowing what the full results might be. Subtle changes, for example, intended to affect only genetic diseases, could have unknown consequences, interfering with signaling pathways, altering immune systems, yeah, like the shape-shifting immune system, or even threatening the species, like humans itself. These same concerns hold for other species as well. One study in mice found that mismatched nuclear mitochondrial DNA led the mice to become exhausted more quickly, and they had different learning speeds. Oh, yeah, that's a good experiment. Let's see what happens when we do that to humans. Like, guys, this stuff is all happening, and nobody is stopping it. It's all in the name of science. These people are megalomaniacs. It's all in the name of getting yourself published, getting yourself a patent, taking your sprinkle funding from DARPA and the DOD, and then spinning out an IPO with a private company. When you get a product, and if Bill Melinda Gates jump on board and give you another big grants to continue your research, all in the name of saving poor people in third world nations and stopping climate change. Creating a mosquito that could not reproduce, or a human, might stop, that was mine in parentheses, might stop the spread of a disease, but it would also, and this is what I said way back when, no one's ever asking this, eliminate the food supply for other animals. What about the poor little bats? You know, yeah, who doesn't hate mosquitoes? But guess what? Mosquitoes have a place in the food chain. Understand food chains? Well, I guess they don't. As all the plankton dies in the ocean, we wonder why we got dead whales. Well, it's called a food chain. Guess what? We're at the top. So as all the little animals start to snuff it, eventually the big animals snuff it. Who would be us? It's really horrifying. You know, I want a side note here. Talk about ecosystem. So for quite a few summers over the last 10 years or so, in the summertime, we go down and visit some friends, and there are a bunch of different water in the spring, different waterways and puddles, big puddles, where we have found tadpoles. Now, anyone who's ever had a kid knows that tadpoles are the subject of a lot of fascination, and we would bring some of them home. So there were some tadpoles out of my friend's puddle, and some tadpoles out of another friend's puddle, and some tadpoles out of my one friend's pond, and tadpoles out of a big pond. They've all come here at different times. And those tadpoles got put into my fountain, which was a pretty, pretty mellow fountain. But it was all in the shade and had ferns around. It was actually a pretty nice little fountain. It's broken now. It actually cracked in the storm. Cold, cold, cold 2 years ago. So it's empty at the moment, but I might fix it. But anyway, and all this water running in there. And we put the tadpoles in there, and we put rocks in there, so once they got legs, they could get out. And there were mosquitoes and stuff that flew around there, so there was all kinds of food. Well, the last year, this summer in particular, we've been finding all different kinds of toads. And yesterday, I found a bright green tree frog. I've never in my life, I don't ever remember seeing toads or frogs around here. We literally have an ecosystem, and I'll tell you why, of toads and frogs and snakes, gardener snakes. We saw them zipping up a gutter, and they live my garden. But the gardens are all shaded in the back there. So I think what they all did, they went underneath the deck, and they're like living around the house and in the soil where it stays moist and cool underneath there. But let me tell you something. For the last 10 years, it really, really, really was impossible to go outside in the summertime out in my backyard because the mosquitoes all lived under the deck. And as soon as it got cool, they would start arising, out from between the wood slats, and you would get eaten alive. It was impossible to go watch stars or meteor showers or anything here. We noticed when, after I found the fourth amphibious creature the other day, over this weekend, I was like, you know what? I think these frogs are the frogs we brought back, frogs and toads. And I bet you, because they seem to be living under the deck, that's why there's no more mosquitoes. We don't have any mosquitoes. But we created an entire ecosystem. There was an abundant food supply and a really nice little habitat, just no little creatures to live in it, to start sucking them up. So they asked this question. So we created a positive change in the ecosystem. They eat my mosquitoes. But what other species might be affected if we wipe out the mosquitoes? So it's not just going to be the bats. Probably going to be the little frogs. And then when there's no frogs, well, there might not be any little gardener snakes. And when there's no gardener snakes, well, you might be overrun with little wild mousies. One little change makes a very huge change, and it amplifies and echoes. These same concerns hold for other species as well. One study in mice found that mismatching nuclear mitochondrial DNA, and we read that, become exhausted. But what happens when we start having the questions now of accidents and negligence? And this is what else I was saying. Where is the biosecurity level 4? With any of this technology that's happening, we found out that obesity is contagious through your gut bacteria and your fecal bacteria. And that follows you around like Pigpen from Charlie Brown and Big Cloud around you. You go into public, you fart, I don't know, they didn't actually give details on how you were spreading that bacteria. But I would assume you have all these different cultures, so you got it, you know, in your airways, so when you sneeze and when you let some gas go and when you use a public bathroom, who the hell knows? But it's being spread. So what if you were a researcher who's working on synthetic gut bacteria that creates drugs inside of people like Synlogix? You didn't have your N95 face mask on. And you pricked your finger through your lateral glove. And you unwittingly became infected with synthetic gut bacteria. Could you potentially spread that around at JFK or LAX? When you stopped in the bathroom while you were waiting for Aunt Susie to get off the plane? Well, from what we've read, yes. Absolutely yes. You might be able to spread that gut bacteria. That mutated gut bacteria. What's going to happen when it really becomes a quote-unquote cure? Synlogix is to cure inflammation, right? To cure disease. This is what they're all about. This is the spin-out from MIT that now is funding from who? Oh, yeah, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There's many, many companies like that. Will experiments be conducted with proper biosafety and biosecurity measures in mind? What if an altered organism escapes into the wild? Will all those conducting these experiments understand that certain tests are simply too dangerous to undertake? Well, I don't think so, Clyde. And what about weaponization? pathogens engineered for biological attacks could target individuals or groups based upon your ethnicity. They could also be employed in large-scale attacks with devastating consequences. And additionally, they could be developed to strike plants or animals that sustain our food supply. Now, that's what Plum Island was all about, guys. That's what Dr. Huber is very well versed in. That's why Dr. Huber is such an authority on all this stuff, because he worked with them on plant and animal diseases and pathogens under the biowarfare program. Gene editing techniques could produce forms of diseases that barely resemble their naturally occurring counterparts, such as engineered pathogens, could sicken or even kill hundreds of thousands of people. Yeah, it's called a pandemic, bird, swine, flu, pig, goat illness that just appeared out of nowhere, never before seen. Pay attention. That's why I say these never before seen 35 new bacteria groups in a puddle in Colorado. I'm like, yeah, I got a bridge to sell you too. And armed with the proper genetic sequences, states or bioterrorists could employ genome editing to create highly virulent pathogens for use in such attacks. And they could, for example, change a less dangerous non-pathogenic strain of anthrax into a highly virulent form by altering the genome or recreating pathogens such as deadly smallpox, which was eradicated in the wild in 1980. And remember, we have all that anthrax that was shipped all over the world by the DOD that was never properly killed, guys. Wink, wink, wink. As the technology continues to proliferate, the list of threats is likely to grow. And as it gets cheaper and cheaper, and we have an incomplete understanding of the response to these gene manipulations, and research keeps going ahead, we should expect those limits to break down and technology to be more widely available, and we're going to be totally screwed. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Tuesday, lots and lots of live radio today, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. And take care.